This is Mark Steiner. We're going to continue our conversations about the George Zimmerman trial, about Trayvon Martin, reflecting on that moment, which I think is a very critical moment in this early 21st century, about race and more. And we're about to talk to Alafair Burke. She's professor at the Maurice Adine School of Law at Hofstra University, author of 9 best-selling crime novels. Her most recent thriller was called If You Were Here, and built around the New York NYPD detective Ellie Hatcher. And she's also formerly a prosecutor in Portland, Oregon. And Alafair Burke, welcome. Good to have you with us on the Mark Steiner Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always good to talk to somebody who's bringing more women heroes, heroines to us in novel form. It's a good thing.
I like to think so. Thank you.
So, but going to the serious matter at hand, as we reflect on the outcome of the Zimmerman trial, when we've talked in the beginning of the trial, we talked a number of lawyers and law professors about the makeup of the jury. But your sense of looking at this trial, taking it, as you said, race is important, the issues of cultural and racial tensions and the definition of America are all part of this story. But what you were focusing on in this piece were the instructions to the jury, something I've seen covered very little.
Right. I think it's gotten lost a little bit in the larger tensions that I think, as you know, my view is that the verdict should correctly, and the case has always been about not just one moment and not just one life that was lost, but that moment tends to, for many people, encapsulate feelings about race and the racialized feelings we have in the United States about guns and self-defense, and all of that's important to talk about. But when you actually look at the verdict and you look at the job the jurors were asked to do, I know from trying cases, I tend to think jurors really do take their job seriously, and they sit there and they listen to the facts. They have their own gut feeling about what is right and wrong, but they are told over and over again by both the judge and the lawyers for both parties that they're supposed to listen to the law and apply it to the facts. They don't get to just go back there and decide what they want to do. I mean, they can, but they're supposed to listen to those jury instructions. And so when the verdict came out, I found myself wondering, well, what were they told about self-defense? I know what I thought the law of self-defense was because I'd been following the case and I had read the statutes that applied in Florida. But I never actually saw any coverage about what they were told about Florida law, so I went and looked. And if you listen to the comments that have come out from the two jurors that did publicly discuss their perspective of the verdict, although one person initially thought it should be murder, the other person thought that he was not guilty altogether, and eventually they both voted for an acquittal, what the two of them did agree on is they both said in different ways, we didn't think that Zimmerman used his head, right, that he did, what he did wasn't right. You know, I think the one woman said he's going to have to account to God. The other woman said he wasn't using his senses, which a lot of people call manslaughter. Mm-hmm. You don't use your senses and it kills somebody. Mm-hmm. But they both said, but we read the law and what he did wasn't unlawful. And again, they don't read the law. They don't go to the law library and do case research. They don't read the statutes. They get jury instructions. And when you look at the jury instructions, the instruction they heard includes several points that undoubtedly help Zimmerman. So what a lot of people don't realize who are critical of the verdict is that it doesn't have to be the case that Zimmerman's use of force was actually necessary to save his life. Instead, it just has to be that he reasonably believed it was necessary, so he can make a mistake in his judgment if it's a reasonable belief. And it doesn't have to be necessary to save his life. It can be necessary to save him from grave physical harm. So even extremely serious injury, one can take a life if it is reasonably believed to be necessary to avoid grave harm to yourself. Secondly is the stand your ground part of Florida law, which means that he doesn't have a duty to try to retreat if, in fact, that test has been met. He doesn't have to try to get away. If the test has been met, he's justified in using force. And then finally, in Florida, the state had the burden of disproving self-defense beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not George Zimmerman's burden to prove that he did have a reasonable belief in force. They have to show that beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not have a reasonable belief in that. So when you put all of that together, I think both of those jurors were saying, we got to that moment where we believed a couple of the witnesses who said that it was Trayvon Martin on top, Zimmerman at the bottom, and that he was getting beaten. He was losing the fight, basically. And they focused on that narrow moment. What some people keep coming back to, though, is, well, that narrow moment wouldn't have happened if George Zimmerman had just stayed in his car or
right.
hadn't followed Trayvon Martin in the first place for what many people believe was no apparent reason. And what the, even the one juror said, oh, he didn't use his senses. So there is something in the law that captures that intuition that, hey, if you were the one who's responsible for this fight in the first place and you're losing, you can't claim self-defense.
So,
and that's called an initial aggressor exception. But the jury never even heard about that. It wasn't part of the instructions because the prosecution wanted an instruction telling them that there was a thing called the initial aggressor exception, and the court did not give it.
One of the things that struck me about your article when it comes to this, that which is, I think that people, not only did the jury not understand it, I think most of America watching didn't understand it, that they knew something was wrong, because many people who thought George Zimmerman was guilty and thought this had everything to do about race in America, of course, are condemning a jury that had no African Americans on it for coming to this verdict. But what you're positing is, I think, interesting. You're saying that beyond that, this whole initial aggressor exception that was not allowed in by the judge, and you go into great detail about the conversations between the prosecution and the defense and the judge around this initial aggressor exception that she didn't allow, the judge did not allow. I mean, in some ways, that to me is what you're arguing is the crux of why the jury could not find Zimmerman guilty technically when it comes to how the law was read and interpreted by the judge to the jury.
Right.
Right?
I would love to talk to the prosecutors and know. I want to know if they knew when they lost that argument about the initial aggressor instruction, how problematic it was for them. Because that really was, they were trying to get a murder conviction that is hard under the law. You have to have a very high mental state of, you know, really animus towards the victim and wanting that person to die, and that was going to be a hard thing for them to get. And I think manslaughter was always the backup of, well, you kind of created this dangerous situation and somebody died because of it. That's what we call manslaughter. But the way to get to manslaughter through the jury instructions wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The way to get there would have been that initial aggressor instruction to kind of take the self-defense issue off the table. And then focus on what Zimmerman's mental state really was. But they couldn't, both of the jurors agree that ultimately they couldn't take self-defense off the table, and self-defense applies not just to murder but to manslaughter as well.
So do you think that one of the things you write here, and I think this is interesting, that it's almost as if you're inferring that the judge, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but that you're inferring that the judge was intimidated on some levels by the defense when they used, as you wrote, important words like error, and as a matter of law, that they were invoking what we've talked about in the show before, the Gibson versus V State, and
right.
The arguments
on the jury instructions are available online, and I link to them in the piece.
Yeah, you do.
And again,
yes.
It's not something I ever saw the news cover, so people who are really interested in this should actually go watch the arguments. It's only a few minutes. And the quality of the argument, in my view, really wasn't very good. They weren't getting to the heart of what I thought the issue really needed to be, which is there enough evidence there that a reasonable jury could find, not that they're necessarily going to, but is there enough factual evidence in the record that they could possibly, plausibly find that Zimmerman was the one who actually set off whatever interaction occurred with them through violence or threat of violence. That's the standard of provocation there in Florida. And instead of focusing on the arguments kind of went around and around about other issues. And you can tell the judge is kind of starting to get impatient and winding down and wanting to rule. And at the very end, the defense attorney interjected he cites a case called Gibbs versus State, and he says, you know, as a matter of law, it would be error, which is basically saying you're going to get reversed on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And does anybody really want this case tried again? And do you want to be blamed for having messed it up? And immediately, she says, the state tries to rebut the argument, saying, wait a second, no. And the judge says, I'm not giving the instruction. And once that happens, that changes everything, because the defense had offered sort of backup instructions, assuming that the initial aggressor instruction was going to be given. They had a follow-up instruction that made clear that you're only the initial aggressor if you used force or the threat of force. They wanted an instruction that said simply following somebody isn't illegal. And all of that, they didn't need those instructions anymore, because the initial aggressor instruction wasn't even a part of it. So the jury never had to look at what I think really is the issue, which is, could you say that following Trayvon Martin without explanation after he's been told not to do that, could that be seen as a threat of force? Not that he intended it as a threat of force, but just like self-defense turns on what someone reasonably believes, can you make the argument that Trayvon Martin then reasonably believes that this person is a threat to him? And so that there would be nothing wrong with if the jury believed that Trayvon Martin was the one to say, hey, you know, what are you doing, or pushed him or something like that. That could be seen as standing his ground and being where he's allowed to be without challenge to his autonomy and his safety. And the instructions just didn't give the jury a way to get to that issue, which I think when I hear people arguing about the case, a lot of people, it comes down to that. Well, wait a second, why can't he be afraid? You know, why can't he defend himself against this strange man who's following him? And isn't Zimmerman ultimately the one responsible for that?
Say for a minute what you think the judge could have done in terms of instructions. What could she have said that would have been different, literally?
Yeah, so I mean, if you believe in the power of juries, and I happen to be someone who does, the jury can only do its job if they know everything they need to know. They need to have the tools to do their job, which is to apply the law to the facts. In my view, the initial aggressor instruction should have been given. They should have been told that you're not the initial aggressor simply because you offend somebody or look at them wrong or act in some aggressive way in the abstract. It's about physical aggression. And so they should have been told that Zimmerman is only an initial aggressor if they believe that he used either force or the threat of force against Trayvon Martin. And you can instruct them on what they need to know about the law, but I think the court was so afraid of messing up that process that she erred on the side of the defense, which was to say, well, let's just not get into it at all. The problem with not getting into it at all is it kept the jury from getting into the point that I think their instincts wanted to get to. Even the kind of pro-Zimmerman juror who said that she thought the whole thing was justified said that at the end of their deliberations, what they were really confused about is whether they had to look only at the narrow moment where he pulled the trigger or whether they could take into account everything. She said the people who wanted to convict him of manslaughter were looking at a much broader time period. They were looking at it all the way from the beginning and couldn't get past the fact that Zimmerman was ultimately responsible for what happened. And at least according to that one juror, she said ultimately we went back to the jury instructions and were persuaded we had to look at that narrow moment in time. And the people who wanted to convict him of manslaughter changed their mind and said, well, if we look only at that narrow period of time, I have a reasonable doubt about self-defense.
So if you were teaching this as a class, the outcome of this trial.
Well, I'm going to.
Well, I'm not surprised. I figured that was the case.
Warning to my future students, get ready to yell at each other.
So would you lay, the in terms of jury instruction, the blame as much on the prosecutors, the prosecuting attorneys' lack of depth in their argument and strength of argument, as you would in the judge quickly snapping to say, as you quoted her in here, quickly snapping to say the defense does not want to give the initial aggressor exception, the state does, the court is not going to give it.
I'm gonna avoid the word blame because I know what it's like.
Of course.
It's just exhausted.
Right, right.
When I watch those arguments with the, you know, the benefit of my ivory tower and not being in trial constantly with that schedule, that ridiculous schedule they had, grueling, I think they were tired. I think they were so wrapped up in the facts of the case, trying to win the factual arguments, that they lost sight of the legal arguments, and they focused more on the facts than on the law, and that invited the judge to basically start acting like a fact finder instead of saying, well, what do I need to do to legally instruct the jury to do its fact-finding? And I think the larger lesson, you know, for the law students and the practicing lawyers out there is lots of cases are won or lost based on what you get in the charge to the jury. If the jury's actually listening, those jury instructions should matter. And a lot of lawyers, even experienced lawyers, lose sight of that because, you know, the pressures of trial are so enormous that sometimes the instructions feel like an after-the-fact thing. But I think this is one of many examples you can dig up in the world where what the jury hears about the law really does make a difference. So when people, you know, criticize the verdict, certainly criticize the case, but the jury, it sounds like they did their job. Because when they comment about it, they both, although they initially disagreed, they both described the process as we kept going back to the jury instructions, which is what they're supposed to do if they're applying the law instead of their own sense of what's right and wrong.
Well, I think that what you wrote was very telling, and I think that it would be interesting to have you back at some point soon just to talk about that with some others in the studio. I think this is a very compelling argument you made. I wish that the prosecutor had made an equally compelling argument, but in that day. And the article is called What You May Not Know About the Zimmerman Verdict, The Evolution of a Jury Instruction, that was in the Huffington Post, that we will post here on steinershow.org so you all can read it and talk about it as well. And we've been talking here with Alafair Burke, who is professor at the Morris A. Dean School of Law at Hofstra University, author of 9 best-selling crime novels, her most recent, If You Were Here, and was a prosecutor in Portland, Oregon, before she was a law professor at Hofstra. And Alafair Burke, thank you so much for your thoughtful piece and for agreeing to talk with our listeners here on The Mark Steiner Show.
No, thank you for the opportunity to do it. I appreciate it.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.